It's frustrating to ask a direct question without getting a direct answer. But anyone who asks questions has learned that sometimes you get an answer and sometimes you don't. And sometimes an indirect answer is what's most appropriate. And there have been times when non-answers did more good than a direct answer could have.
That's the Reverend Joe Evans with a challenging message entitled, Where Were You? I'm Peter Wallace, and this is Day One.
Welcome to Day One, the weekly program that brings you outstanding preachers from America's historic Protestant churches, sharing insight and inspiration from God's Word for your life. Now, here's your host, Peter Wallace, to introduce today's speaker.
Thanks, Sherry. We're delighted to welcome back to Day One today the Reverend Joseph B. Evans, who just over a year ago became the senior pastor of First Presbyterian Church in Marietta, Georgia. For 6 years before that, he was senior pastor of First Presbyterian Church in Columbia, Tennessee. Joe's a graduate of Presbyterian College in Clinton, South Carolina, and earned his Master of Divinity at Columbia Theological Seminary in Decatur, Georgia. Joe, it's great to have you with us again.
I'm so honored to be here, Peter.
Last week, you introduced us to the church you now serve, First Presbyterian Church of Marietta, Georgia. And I understand it's been fun watching your own kids running around the church you grew up in.
Oh, man.
But how did you manage the transition of leaving First Presbyterian in Columbia, Tennessee, and moving to Marietta's First Presbyterian? That had to be hard.
Peter, that was so hard. 6 years is not a terribly long time in the lifespan of an adult, but Cece, our youngest daughter, was born there, and she had never lived anyplace else. Lily had been in Atlanta for a year, so really all our children's formative memories are in Columbia, Tennessee. They came to understand the church based on the love and acceptance that they received at First Presbyterian Church of Columbia, Tennessee. I remember the moment sitting the kids down, and we said, my wife did it, I think. I think she was the one who was brave enough to say the words. She said, girls, we're moving. And Lily cried like her leg was broken.
Oh.
It was awful. And because it was a small town, we knew people at such an incredible depth.
Mm-hmm.
I was asked to speak at the funeral of a man who was the newspaper editor for years. Mr. Sam Kennedy, the family asked me to come speak at the funeral, which I did, though I was no longer the pastor. I couldn't be the pastor, but I was invited to eulogize by the new pastor of the church. And as I'm speaking at this funeral, I realize that not only do I know Sam, but I know both of Sam's children. I know all of Sam's grandchildren. I even did one of their weddings. And so I also know Sam's great-grandchild.
Wow.
We got to know people at such a deep level, and they got to know us at such a deep level. And I'm thankful that some of those relationships can stay. They just have to change. But leaving that community was very sad.
But you changed one First Presbyterian for another, and though Marietta is part of the Atlanta metro area, it is its own town, and you are on the town square as you were in Columbia.
That's right.
So what other similarities are there where you are now?
I love that question, Peter, because there's a lot of similarities. A lot of the skills that I learned being a pastor in Columbia, Tennessee, apply to being a pastor in Marietta, Georgia. Even though Marietta is in a highly developed county of Cobb County, there are 800,000 people in Cobb County. Marietta is still its own town, and as the senior pastor at First Presbyterian Church of Marietta, I'm still invited to be a part of the community. In my first week of arriving in Marietta, I was invited to lunch by the mayor of Marietta, whose daughter I went on a date with in high school. And there were the other pastors of the downtown Marietta churches, as well as the chief of police. It's a relational place where people know each other. We actually live in the home of another of one of my high school classmates' grandmother. So the relationships are still deep, and we cherish that. We've also, as we formed relationships with the other churches in Columbia, Tennessee, so also we're forming relationships between the churches of Marietta, Georgia, having joint worship services, working together in efforts that benefit our community. It's a great place. We're happy.
I'm going to miss asking you about the annual Mule Day in Columbia, Tennessee, but is there something, anything close to that in Marietta or something that you might start?
Yes. Peter, I'm going to miss telling you about Mule Day. Marietta has, we have a big 4th of July parade. The fireworks were really big. There are fun things. There's Chalktoberfest, where there's people draw chalk all over the streets of the square, but nothing so spectacular as Mule Day, and I fear it can just not be replicated.
So, Joe, you are planning to take a major educational step this fall, starting Doctor of Ministry Studies at Columbia Theological Seminary. What do you intend to focus on there?
I love history, Peter. Mm-hmm. I love the history of the Presbyterian Church, and I'm really curious. One pastor in particular sparked my interest. Gideon Blackburn was a moonshiner in Cherokee country, which was eastern Tennessee. He got expelled from the region, and he became a Presbyterian minister, church planner.
Huh.
And he planted churches from the northern border between Tennessee and Kentucky, First Presbyterian Church, Clarksville, Tennessee, all the way down through Middle Tennessee, all the way to Huntsville, Alabama. And these churches, he got them started, and like First Presbyterian Church, Nashville, which is one of the largest Presbyterian churches in the country, Gideon Blackburn started that church and then left, went to Columbia. That church continued to grow in his absence before an installed pastor was found. So this pastor started the church, left. For years, the church was without a pastor but continued to grow. And what I'm so interested in is what happened.
Mm-hmm.
How did they grow? How were they structured? Because we're now at a point in the Presbyterian church where churches are smaller. They're struggling. This model of having the pastor as pastor CEO is failing, and we have to find out how to better empower our sessions, better empower lay volunteers. And I believe that that's the Presbyterian model that we followed 200 years ago. I think if we can reclaim some of those lessons, they'll apply in new ways in the 21st century.
Well, your sermon this week again draws from the Hebrew Scriptures, this time from Job chapter 38. Would you read it for us?
Yes, sir. Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind. Who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Gird up your loins like a man. I will question you, and you shall declare to me. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? On what were its bases sunk? Or who laid its cornerstone when the morning stars sang together and all the heavenly beings shouted for joy? Or who shut in the sea with doors when it burst out from the womb? When I made the clouds its garment, and thick darkness its swaddling band, and prescribed bounds for it, and set bars and doors, and said, Thus far shall you come, and no farther, and here shall your proud waves be stopped. Who has cut a channel for the torrents of rain, and a way for the thunderbolt, to bring rain on a land where no one lives, on the desert which is empty of human life? To satisfy the waste and desolate land, and to make the ground put forth grass. Can you hunt the prey for the lion? or satisfy the appetite of the young lions when they crouch in their dens or lie in wait in their covert? Who provides for the raven its prey when its young ones cry to God and wander about for lack of food?
Many of us know the story of Job and his trials and tribulations, and in this section we get just a sense of God's response to his whining. Joe, we look forward to hearing more about this in your sermon, Where Were You? Thanks for sharing it with us.
Thank you, Peter. It's frustrating to ask a direct question without getting a direct answer. So I apologize that, as is the case so often with politicians, doctors, and lawyers, where many significant statements are made but few direct answers are given, we also have this scripture lesson from the 38th chapter of Job, where after Job asked a direct question to God, "Why, Lord, must the innocent suffer?" Not even God seems willing to give a clear and direct answer in response. It's frustrating. What Job wants is the truth, but God seems to be echoing those iconic words of Jack Nicholson when he starred in A Few Good Men. You want the truth, you can't handle the truth. Our passage begins, "Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind. Who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Gird up your loins like a man. I will question you, and you shall declare to me." This is not a gentle response, nor is it a direct answer. But anyone who asks questions has learned that sometimes you get an answer and sometimes you don't. I remember well enough a day in Sunday school long ago. We were in fourth or fifth grade and had just read the account in the Gospel of Luke chapter 2. After 8 days had passed, it was time to circumcise the child. "Mr. Farah," I asked my teacher, "what exactly is circumcision?" "Well, that's a question you should probably ask your father," he responded. Now, that wasn't the answer I was looking for, but sometimes an indirect answer is what's most appropriate. And while it's disappointing in the moment, there have been times when non-answers did more good than a direct answer could have. I remember sitting in my grandmother's kitchen. I was in the middle of my first year of college, and having spent most of high school goofing off, college posed more of a challenge for me than it did for many of my classmates. Knowing that I was discouraged and wondering whether or not I'd even make it, my grandmother started telling me about long nights in nursing school. She was about my age then, 18 or 19, away from home for the first time, asked to cram more information into her brain than seemed possible, especially during daylight hours. But lights had to be turned off in the dorm by 10 o'clock at night. The only lights that could stay on were the ones in the ladies' bathroom. So, she would study there, sitting on those cold tiles, reading on the night before a test, and after graduating, she began a 50-year career in nursing. Now that's perspective. The kind of perspective that only my grandmother could have provided, and every time I'd be tempted to complain about studying hard, I'd imagine her there on that bathroom floor, and she didn't seem so far away, nor did my lot seem so pitiful. She, my own flesh and blood, had made it through worse. The perspective of grandparents, they'll tell you that they walked uphill to school both ways, but nothing can help us see the sufferings of this present age clearly, like the experience of those who made it through worse. And if the perspective of a grandparent is beneficial, imagine how helpful is the perspective of God. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? The Lord asked Job. Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? On what were its bases sunk? Or who laid its cornerstone when the morning stars sang together and all the heavenly beings shouted for joy? The Lord answers Job this way. And in one sense, this stanza of God's poetic non-answer makes Job and all his problems seem so very small. The death of his family, the destruction of his home, like a blip in a cosmic timeline. But this account of creation in the 38th chapter of Job is more than that. For in this testimony is the account of the God who laid the foundation of the earth, determined its measurements, and stretched a line upon it. It is the story of how God has been in the business of building up beauty out of nothing since the beginning of time. The formless mass of that nothingness that existed before creation was the Lord's building blocks. And when there was darkness, before there were even lights to turn out, the Lord laid the cornerstone and the morning stars were born to sing together. Just as my grandmother helped me to see that I could study, I could be successful in college, so the Lord is helping Job to see that you can make a life out of nothing. You can rebuild, for I am with you and I have done that and much greater things before. Now, this isn't a direct answer to Job's question of suffering. But there is value in God's perspective. There is always value in perspective. Back in 2013, researchers from Boston College analyzed data from a long-term study called the Longitudinal Study of Generations. The study gathered data from 376 grandparents and 340 grandchildren and concluded that an emotionally close grandparent-adult-grandchild relationship was associated with fewer symptoms of depression for both generations. The greater emotional support grandparents and adult grandchildren received from one another, the better their psychological health. And you can already imagine why that is the case, that grandchildren benefit from the perspective their grandparents provide, because they teach you to appreciate the restrooms at every gas station on the interstate when you travel with them. But you also value those restrooms because you hear about your young grandfather who, as a boy, tried to relieve himself out of an old Model A while it was still moving. The story goes that the windows were down back where his sisters were sitting, and unfortunately, the wind was blowing the wrong way. And you hear this story and you remember one who has made it through hard times already, who passed through the rough waters of the Great Depression, World War II, unemployment, and still maintained his sense of humor. His perspective alone gives me strength to overcome obstacles that lie before me. He is one who has gone before. But my grandfather's perspective is dwarfed by that of my God. Think of the stormy seas of life. And then consider the Lord who shut in the sea with doors when it burst out from the womb. The Lord gives an account from the memory of one who is infinite and remembers the sea when she was a little baby. When I made the clouds its garment and thick darkness its swaddling band, and prescribed bounds for it, and set bars and doors, and said, thus far shall you come, and not farther, and here shall your proud waves be stopped. Can you hear the Lord say, the sea was like chaos, but I grabbed that great chaos up and changed a diaper? So even now, the chaos that you face, the victimization, the sadness, the despair, and the heartache, just as I tame the sea, so will I bring order to your life once more. Perspective. There's some comfort in that. Because when you are facing hardship for the first time, it feels like the end of the world. In fifth grade, my nose started bleeding right there in the middle of class. Some kid called me a booger picker, and the rumor spread. I went home that afternoon and made the bold announcement to my mother, "I know you like it here, Mom, but we're going to have to move. I can't go back to that school ever again." I can hear her now. "You think they're mean now, Joe? Just wait." But I can hear her just as well saying, "I've made it through worse. And I'm here to tell you, this is going to be okay." Who has cut a channel for the torrents of rain? And a way for the thunderbolt to bring rain on a land where no one lives, on the desert which is empty of human life, to satisfy the waste and desolate land and to make the ground put forth grass. There is such a great benefit to knowing the ones who have seen the desert put forth grass. One who has been a witness to such a miracle is the great C.S. Lewis, who, among other books, also wrote one about mourning the death of his wife. It's called A Grief Observed. It begins with a description. "No one ever told me that grief felt so much like fear. I'm not afraid, but the sensation is like being afraid. The same fluttering in the stomach. The same restlessness, the yawning I keep on swallowing. And there are moments," he writes, "most unexpectedly, when something inside me tries to assure me that I don't really mind so much, not so very much after all. Love is not the whole of a man's life." Then comes a sudden jab of red-hot memory, and all this common sense vanishes like an ant in the mouth of a furnace. The book is valuable, but it can't tell you why. It can't tell you why the Lord would create a world in which the innocent suffer. Why the Lord would create a world where the guilty go free. It can't tell you why there is so much evil and pain and hatred, why there would be men in God's creation who would abuse their own mothers, parents who forsake their children, diseases that afflict our bodies and rend us with no thought in our minds beyond pain. You can look, but neither in the Bible nor anywhere else have I found a satisfying answer to the question why there would be cancer. Why death? And why grief would be so deep and so bottomless? And the book of Job is this. Can you hunt the prey for the lion, or satisfy the appetite of the young lions when they crouch in their dens or lie in wait in their covert? Who provides for the raven its prey when its young ones cry to God and wander about for lack of food? Is this poetry a direct answer to our questions? Hardly. But in this passage is perspective. The young lions were hungry, and I satisfied their appetites. The ravens cried aloud to God, and I provided. Will I not do the same for you? Amen.
Our day one preacher today was the Reverend Joe Evans, senior pastor of First Presbyterian Church of Marietta, Georgia. For a free printed transcript of his message, Where Were You?, call us toll free at 1-888-411-DAY1. That's 888-411-3291. Or write to us at Day 1, 2715 Peachtree Road, Atlanta, Georgia 30305. And remember, Day 1 depends on the generous contributions of our faithful listeners. If you appreciate our ministry, please consider sending a tax-deductible donation. We're grateful for your much-needed support. I'm Sherry Miller. Next week, we're pleased to welcome the Reverend Matt Gaventa, senior pastor of University Presbyterian Church in Austin, Texas. His sermon on the last chapter of Job is called Home Repair 101. Don't miss it. Joe Evans offers some final reflections on today's message with our host, Peter Wallace.
Joe, thanks for this wonderful reminder that God is God and we are not. You said there are so many questions that we, like Job, might ask God, and God tends not to answer us directly. Jesus had that habit as well. So would you say more about why that seems to be and why that's good news?
It doesn't sound like good news at first.
Right.
When I ask a question, I'm asking it for a reason. I want an answer. And how often have we been frustrated by a doctor who says, well, I'm not really sure if you're going to get any better. Or a politician who fills us up with verbiage but doesn't mean anything. We live in a time, and I suppose we've always lived in a time, where there aren't always direct answers. And that's what we long for. But not even God gives a direct answer. And I think that this is good news today, because rather than giving us an answer, God gives us something that at times can be even more valuable, which is perspective. Sometimes in life, it's our perspective that causes so much despair, because we can't see beyond our pain or our guilt or our fear. And the perspective of God lifts us above our current situation to see a grander scheme. The perspective of God shows us something new and different, shows us often that we're not the first one to suffer, and just as others have been through this dark valley, so also you will make it through this dark valley. I can relate to that kind of perspective, because it was with some fear and trepidation that I accepted the call to go back to First Presbyterian Church of Marietta after a period of turmoil, and especially after this church split. But then I began to read the history of the church. And in this history, the time of the pastorate of Reverend Palmer is described. Reverend Palmer served First Presbyterian Church right after the Civil War, when the pews in the sanctuary had been burned, and where the sanctuary had been used as a hospital during the Battle of Kennesaw Mountain. And so I thought to myself, well, this isn't so bad. Think of Dr. Palmer. Think of Reverend Palmer. Reverend Palmer faced a much harder time, and yet the church persevered. Will God not enable us to make it through this time? God has seen worse, whatever we're facing. God has seen worse and gotten God's people through worse. And that kind of perspective gives hope.
And in a way, forces us to increase our faith.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah, anytime we're forced to see beyond what we can see, look at the bigger picture, that increases our faith.
Joe, what's one thing from your sermon that you hope our listeners will keep in mind in the days ahead?
You know, something tangible and practical. There are people in your circle. There are neighbors. There are grandparents. If you develop a relationship with them, their perspective will will enable you to persevere through the troubles of your current circumstance. The perspective of my grandparents have made me a person that's able to persevere. The perspective of former pastors, and especially this perspective of God, enables me to make it through times that I didn't think I'd make it through.
Mm-hmm.
So I would call on people to develop relationships, because an additional benefit of having a relationship with your grandparents and your neighbors and with God is that you gain perspective, and that perspective gives us perseverance and deepens our faith.
Joe Evans, thank you for being with us.
I'm so proud to be here, Peter.
Day One is the voice of America's mainline Protestant churches. Visit us online at dayone.org. Our program is recorded and edited by Donald Jones and produced by Peter Wallace. Thank you for joining us. I'm Sherry Miller, wishing you all God's blessings on day one and forever.